This meeting is being recorded.
I like that pleasant voice. We'll call the meeting to order. Everybody stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Yes, good evening. Mr. Esteban.
Here.
Mr. Jalowick.
Here.
Mr. Kopchanski.
Here.
Mr. Sanchez.
Here.
Mr. Miskiewicz.
Here.
Mr. Sadlick. Mr. DiGiovanni.
Here.
Mr. Fratterola. And Mr. Blisman.
Okay, we'll move on to item number four. Thank you, Karen. Additions, deletions, and corrections to the agenda. I'll let the record show that I do not have any this evening. Communications. Let the record state I do not have any communications this evening. Hello? David?
Yes.
I wasn't sure whether you wanted to say something or not. Okay, the public portion, is there anybody from the public who would like to address the committee at this time? Is there anybody from the public who would like to address the commission at this time? Tom, are you sure you don't have anything to say this evening? I got to check.
I know you want to hear me talk. I got nothing. I have nothing.
Thank you very much, Tom. Is there anybody else from the public who would like to address the commission at this time? Okay, we'll move on to item number seven, approval of minutes, 9:20 regular meeting. I just sent them to everyone. I wasn't sure if anybody had a chance to review them at this time. If not, we can motion to table them for that next meeting.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'll second the motion. Is there any discussion? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, receipt of applications. Let the record state there is no new applications to be received this evening. Informal discussion, NVCOG, Regional Plan of Conservation Development 2023. Joanna, it's all yours.
Thank you, Chairman Estwan. Really appreciate you helping us arrange this time to speak before the Planning and Zoning Commission of Derby. Tonight, I am joined by my colleague, Rich Donovan. Rich, do you want to say hello?
Yes, good evening, everyone. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and Rich is the Transportation Director. I am a Senior Regional Planner. We're both from Naugatuck Valley Council of Governments. I'd like to share my screen for the presentation that I've put together. Should I just try?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay.
Mark, if you have to give her rights to share, I don't know, but I have no problem with that.
Okay. Are you seeing
perfect.
It?
Yes, I am.
Oh, very good, very good. Okay. So once again, thank you again for this opportunity to speak before your Planning and Zoning Commission this evening. I'm going to move over to the next slide and tell you why we're here. Well, we're writing our first regional plan of conservation and development, and we need your help. Now, our goal is to create a plan of conservation and development that's relevant and useful to the towns, all of our 19 towns in the Naugatuck Valley Council of Governments region. And we want to make sure that we're working on issues that are important and relevant to our towns. So this evening, we're going to start with a short presentation that I'll be leading. First of all, who we are, what we do as a Council of Governments. What is the Regional Plan of Conservation Development? Why we do plan regionally. Giving you guys a little bit of a taste of the things, the trends that we're going to start addressing in our regional plan document. And really, the rest of the time, we want to do less talking and more listening to what your Planning and Zoning Commission members find important and what you guys think about the whole region. Okay. So I'm going to start off, first of all, what is the NVCOG? Well, it's similar to your Valley Council of Governments, but bigger. We're a 19-town region. We're one of nine state-designated regional planning organizations in the state. Our offices are in Waterbury, and we are a voluntary organization of 19 municipalities. And it is the 19 chief elected officials that serve on our board and who are, in essence, our bosses. Most of our money does come from federal transportation dollars. However, we do have a staff of professionals, 22 at this point, four part-time, that work in the areas of transportation, environmental, brownfields, and emergency management. And we also, of course, have a regional planning commission, and your Gino DiGiovanni is Derby's representative, most recently appointed representative. So thank you, Gino, for being on the call this evening.
You're welcome.
Okay, so why do we plan regionally? Well, it's our bread and butter, but also, you know, we believe that we have this perspective that we live in a regional community and we all rely on each other for work, housing, healthcare, and other services. So we're looking at where we find connections and where we find interdependencies. And we are also recognize that there are a lot of issues that cross municipal boundaries. Some of these, like attracting and keeping younger residents, supporting an aging population, and protecting and connecting natural resources. Mostly, we believe that if there's a way that one community, more than one community, can benefit from a project or a grant, then we pursue it. Okay, so what is the Regional Plan of Conservation and Development? Well, it's very similar to what you do at the municipal level, but it's less specific. And I want to say that this is something that is, as per the Connecticut General Statutes, we do have to create one or update it every 10 years. However, it is your municipal POCD that guides your land use decisions. Ours is entirely advisory and looking at projects and areas where there more than one community could benefit. And it is something about to put together a regional cohesive vision for our whole region. But I just want to emphasize that we're not looking for a one size fits all for everybody, but we want to figure out what might work for more than one community. Okay, and we are looking at very broad brush perspectives on land use, conservation, transportation, economic development, and housing, just to name a few. Our regional POCD is based on the municipal and state plans of conservation and development, some of the data research that we do, and public input, similar to what we're doing tonight. We do look at patterns and trends over time. We do look at what's the preferred land use. So where does it really make more sense to have conservation, development, or a balance of the two? But most of all, we're looking at best practices for towns across our region. So who uses it? Well, you in your land use departments and as a planning and zoning commission, you use it for referrals, grants, and project prioritization. But the final adoption of this regional plan of conservation development, that stands with the NVCOG board, the 19 chief elected officials that make up our board. So, just jumped ahead. So key components, very simple, existing conditions report. That's what we're working on right now, looking at the data and what trends are we seeing that come up from the data. The regional and goals and strategies, that's going to begin to be formed once we finish the existing conditions report and go through our POCD reviews and public input. And finally, we're going to have land use map suite. This is going to be both paper and digital. So our anticipated timeline. Right now, we're in this first phase where we're actually talking with land use departments and planning and zoning commission members like yourself. But you know something, in the previous plans of conservation development at the regional scale, public participation was kind of an afterthought. So we're starting off with public participation this time around. And hopefully by this time next year, we'll have a final draft again for review by the municipal land use commissions. Okay, so tonight I'm going to just review some of the data that we've been looking at, and maybe you can help us understand what's going on. But I'm going to just show you a couple three graphs. Okay, first of all, the aging population. At the regional scale, we've got, you know, from in 2010, the US Census said we had about 448,000 people in the region. In 2020, it was 450,000, about. So, you know, our population is pretty stable. However, as you can see from this graph, if we take a broad brush stroke and say people who are of working age are 18 to 64, that group of people is decreasing, whereas the non-working population, generally the 65 and under 18s, those populations are increasing, which may mean that we have to plan for, you know, the needs of aging older adults. So how does it looking for Derby? Well, you know something, you're not really following our entire region. The working age population is decreasing. However, you've got a lot more people in the younger age range that are up and coming, at least what's projected for 2030. And this is something else. This is something that I find very interesting. This is a graph about how many people live and work in a certain area. So when we look at the region, we're looking at the 19 towns that are in our region. As you can see, the percentage of residents who live and work within those 19 towns has been decreasing over the last few years. And that's a trend within Derby. So within Derby, the residents within Derby that actually work in Derby also has been decreasing from 12.3% to most recently 7.1%. So what this might mean is that, you know, there are more people that are commuting outside the area for work, and more people are just using as a bedroom community the places where they live. Now I'm going to be done. I am done speaking for the evening. What I would like to do is ask you all from these four questions, and hopefully we can have a little bit of discussion. Or if you have something else that you wanted to make a comment on, something that I mentioned, or if you have a question, happy to answer that now as well. But I'm just going to go in here and just go into our first question. So, you know, what do you see as Derby's role in the greater 19-town region? I would just like to say that I did attend the Valley Community Foundation, their community index this morning, as did Rich. And it was a really great presentation. It's a great look at that sub-regional, I believe it's seven communities that they profile. But right now we're thinking more in terms of the 19-town region. So if you have any ideas, or, you know, if you don't, you know, let me know. Floor is yours.
Okay, Joanna, this is Ted. I have a question. Just, I know you're looking at things regionally. What would make you, or regionally, if you're coming up with a plan of conservation development, what makes you think Derby's needs are the same as Bristol's, or so on, or someone that's so far away and might be a different makeup? Because I know you showed us versus NVCOG. What about us versus Woodbury, Watertown, Thomaston, Plymouth, Bristol? What makes you think, or what do you use as a tool to put us all together and come up with a plan that will benefit all?
First of all, we're looking at U.S. Census data. And we look not only at U.S. Census data, but data that comes from the Connecticut departments. We also look at third-party data like Zillow, and we make comparisons on those levels. We also look at transportation, like I was showing you the commuting patterns. That's also part of the U.S. Census. But you know something, that's something we're exploring, that question right now. What does Bristol have in common with Derby.
But
to me, right now, it's perhaps an aging population, or maybe not so much.
But just to say, I said that at the beginning when they disbanded VCOG and made a part of NVCOG. It became regional and that big. I'm saying, why drive something so big? And now that it's coming where you're regionally planning, the questions are the same. What makes whoever the powers that be think that our needs are the same as, say, Southbury's or Woodbury's or Watertown's? Who determines that when they put this together?
What we're doing is we're looking at issues that we hear from, excuse me, from regional planning commission, from the CEOs that attend our meetings. Our discussions with land use departments, whether it's Riches, myself, or our planning director, Josh Lacar, we're trying to find the connections. We know that not every town is the same, that maybe once some are more urban, some are more rural, but like the types of population growth, the types of populations we need to prepare for, the types of housing that need to happen to help keep people in the area. Those are the types of things. Who determines that? That's why we're out here today talking to you guys. We have a whole group of staff planners that analyze data, but that's just one part of it. Then we go out and we talk to people. You know, are what we're finding, what's the story behind it? We don't want to say that Bristol equals Derby, but they have just as equal need for a good quality of life. And we want to make sure that good quality of life is within all of our 19 towns.
Nobody's disputing that. The mm-hmm. question I had was more or less, what makes you, or anybody, or the powers that be, makes you think if we're lumped all together, the needs would be the same, or if you're writing a regional plan, our plan might not be the same as, say, Woodbury's.
So that's true.
What would you, are you looking at all of the 19 towns together for that specific region? What is the ultimate goal?
The ultimate goal is to identify shared issues. Transportation is one of them. We do have a metropolitan transportation plan that's going to do a deeper dive. Economic development, that's something that we already have the community economic development SEDS plan, strategic plan. And that's also already based on 19 towns. I really do feel like we all depend on each other. Like for healthcare, you might go to Griffin Hospital. I know Derby, has Griffin Hospital, but I live in Torrington. I'll go down maybe to Waterbury for St. Mary's or Waterbury Hospital. You know, those are the types of things. Guess I'm not really answering your questions, but if you could ask it one more time.
What makes the powers that be, you're putting together, you're tasked with putting together a regional plan.
Right.
Our needs might not be the same as our neighboring town's needs or the same as Southbury, Woodbury, Bethlehem, Watertown, but you're tasked with lumping them kind of all together. Why?
Well, for one reason is that it's, I wouldn't use the word lumping together. I would say that it's a region that, all of your towns agreed to be part of the region. You know, that's what happened in 2015. And, they're based on cooperation and working together on issues. And if there is, say, for the Waterbury branch line, there's more than one community that uses that branch line. And, we want to figure out, well, what are the issues that cross all of those regions, what all of those towns, and, how we can make all of those towns benefit, not just one.
Okay.
Who does that? You would have to probably talk with your state representative. I don't know if that's really above my pay grade to figure out why someone lumped with somebody else. But, now that we are together, we really care about every one of those 19 towns that are part of our region. And we want all of them to benefit as much as possible from whatever monies are available at the federal and state levels. And this is one way that we can prioritize that and help our towns get the most benefit.
Thank you very much.
If I can just jump in real quick as well, you know, I think just because we are looking at this as a larger regional level doesn't mean that we expect Bristol's needs to be the same as Derby's. You know, right? We're putting together kind of a regional view of what is happening, and perhaps there are things that are shared, but perhaps there's not. And so none of this is going to say that it's one plan that has to apply to every town, right? We understand, you know, Bethlehem and Derby are as opposite as you can get within our region, but pretty much as opposite as you can get from a development pattern as well. And so there's, you know, none of this is intended to say that we're going to force, you know, one model on all 19 towns. In fact, quite the opposite. We're going to be looking at the patterns of all 19 towns, identifying some similarities, and any, you know, potential ways that the region can better cooperate. But none of it is to say that one town has to look like the next.
Yeah, and it's really focused on best practices. You know, this worked in another town. It might work for you. You have similar types of populations. You have, you know, you both have over 25,000, or in the case of Derby, 12,000 and change. You know, is there a similar community that did it and with success? Maybe it would work again in Derby. We want to point those success stories out.
Understood. Does any other commission members have any questions or comments for Joanna or Richard? Just bring them up. I mean, these aren't for informal discussion. They've wanted to come before our board to explain what they're doing for a few months now. And for a couple months, we didn't have meetings. So I'm just opening it up. If anybody has anything that they would like to express to Joanna or to Richard, now's the time. I'd appreciate it.
Ted, I have a question.
Yes, David.
As I read the question here, what we see as our community's role in the region, we're speaking about Derby. Okay, I see two main focal points that Derby offers the region. One is healthcare, because we have Griffin Hospital and their satellite health organizations that are with them. And also, we're the main transportation artery from this region to the north, out to New Haven, eastern part of the state, and also down into Bridgeport. So those, I think, are our two major benefits that Derby could offer the region. Transportation.
I tend to agree. And there's no question about it.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
Dave, you hit the two items that I would have mentioned too. One is transportation and one is Griffin. And I attended actually a Griffin function over the weekend and actually have to feel like I was a little bit remiss in realizing how much they are expanding and some of the cutting edge stuff they do or trying to do in the region. So I think that it would behoove our town to go ahead and try to leverage that relationship more and more. And I think we've talked about that in the past, but maybe that's something that this plan can address, is how we leverage that relationship for both, you know, for the town, but also for Griffin as it is.
Yeah. And at today's presentation, there was the president of Griffin mentioning a model of mental health awareness. It was very interesting what he was doing. And he said it's one of the first two in the whole country that they're doing it. So yeah, impressive.
Thanks, Steve. Joanna, if I might add, what's the next question that you have for?
Sure, we can move on.
Go ahead.
So this is a question that we ask ourselves in the regional plan. What challenges does your community face, which would be easier to address working with your neighbors? I know that there's at this point a plan for, I'll give you an example, the Derby and Ansonia, the senior center. I think that's one of the up and coming partnerships that's happening with a neighbor.
Joanna, this is Gino DiGiovanni. One of the graphs that you had up before that discussed or that showed us people that live in town and work in town. And over the years, it went from, I believe it was like something 12 point something percent. And then it went to 7 point something percent.
Yeah, I just put it on the screen for you.
Oh, gotcha. I think that graph there and those statistics show that people that live here don't work here. And what is that reason? I think with, the industrial park, Fountain Lake up there with the Ansonia, that we can get, if we could get that project going, bring some more businesses into town, we could probably get more people to live and work here. I mean, from 7 to 12% over a few years, that's pretty drastic, I think. No, when you only have 12,000 people that live here.
Right, right. One of the points, again, I'm going to mention the Valley Community Foundation. What they made was that you used to, the places like Derby and Ansonia were built on factory, and you live about a block from the factory. Those factories have been, they're in the process of being redeveloped. And, we don't live a block away from a factory, from our source of employment anymore. It's much further. So that's another way to think about what's going on in that particular graph. But yeah, absolutely, it would be great to have more walk to work type situations.
I think it was a good question to bring up, but the other thing I would talk about, and we've heard presentations about even before COVID, the potential shift in the workforce, more working from home. And I mean, as much as there seems to be kind of an even movement of some of that going back to working in offices, the work from home seems to be something that could benefit the community at large, because people, if they, they're working and living in town, they're going to spend more money in town, right? Whether they're working for an employer that's in town versus an employer that's in New York City or in Taiwan, for that matter, or Poland, wherever it might be, really doesn't matter as long as they're paying taxes and using the services of the town. The other thing I would be questioning a little bit is 2019, in face of COVID, is outdated data. And I wonder whether there's going to be any effort in over the next year to try to update that data. I'm not thinking that it may have shifted drastically, but it's still, with the groundswell of what happened during that, that the last 2 years, it would be good to try to vet whether that, those trends are still the same.
Right. And, that's something that we're very aware of. The 2020 U.S. Census data really just goes into maybe April of 2020,
right,
when things were just starting to change. So yeah, your point is well taken. But that's going to be something that we can update in the future once we get those numbers counted. But yeah, absolutely. 2020 seems to be an outlier. It was also a year to really understand what the vulnerable population issues are. So, and that's a vulnerable population across all our 19 town region.
And there's something, Joanna, this is Ted, there's something you brought up before. Our population is 12,000 and change. It's almost identical to what it was in 1960.
Yeah.
It's almost identical, but the average median age is different from 1960 to now.
Right.
So that's something to look at. Why is that different? And a lot of reason, like you said, the walk to work days, the days of Ferrell and American Brass and so on, are not there anymore. They're being regurgitated and used as something else.
Right.
Now, most of the jobs have taken you out, and where you come back into town. And I agree with Steve. If you work if you can walk to work, or if you work in the town you live in, you spend more money because you're there longer. You're not coming home at night. You're saying, oh, I need to go out. I need to get some food. I need to do this. I need to do that. You're there all day long. So you're by nature, you're just going to spend more money. What are those? And maybe that will come out of the first regional plan of conservation and development. And then moving forward into the next one we do, we'll see the trends and the changes. And he brought up another good point about COVID. It takes you to early 2020 at the height of everything. Will there be new data that comes out? Will it show the change in where you work, where you stay, where you play, where, you know, the walk to work, because a lot of people are now working from home.
Mm-hmm.
So that has changed drastically.
True.
I think if you work at home, like Steve said, or you worked at the factory and, you know, walk the block home for lunch, that's kind of the same exact thing. Like you said, Ted, everybody, you know, is staying here, either working at home or right. working at the job that was a block away. So those, I mean, even my wife, she's still working from home, and I don't think they're even going to go back. I know a lot of people that work in Shelton. They're not going back either. You know, they book a conference room once or twice a week. They go in to do a couple of meetings, and then they're still working from home. So I think that trend is going to, you know, stay here. So if that happens and we go from 7% of the people and we either double it or triple it with the new data that comes in, we're going to need some, you know, that's going to help us get some new business, you know, business here in town, because you're going to have to service these people for longer periods of time. Just like mm-hmm. with the projects that were approved downtown. You know, if you have 100 people that live there and you have one, you know, corner store or one coffee shop or one auto repair, and now you have 500 people, well, you're going to need more business. You need the people before the businesses could be sustained.
Well, right. At the end of the day, you bring the critical mass and they'll use more services.
Right. Correct.
But well, Ted, you have to get the critical mass first.
Yeah. This is Ryan. If I could mention something.
Hey,
too.
Ryan.
And I think that same question about working from home, what have you, goes to other potential needs. That I don't know that Derby may need or the region in general, but you know, if there's potential to get federal money to increase broadband technology and internet services to the region and Derby in particular, perhaps that's something that would be considered as part of the infrastructure component of the POCD.
That's a great point. And that's actually a need that's not just in Derby, that's across the region. Better broadband infrastructure.
The one other thing that I would bring up, and most of the other members will probably laugh when they hear, because they'll know exactly why I'm bringing it up. So I'm a long-term volunteer firefighter in Derby. And the one thing that this region misses drastically, and for whatever political reasons we've been negated on getting it, even though we were one of the first regions to look for it, is a regional fire training facility. The state actually owns land in Beacon Falls, and there were plans drawn. We were supposed to be the first regional fire training center in Derby to close in the state, with the promise that we would get one of the first new ones. And that's never happened. And I mentioned that not just because of my affinity to the fire department, but when you look at the declining populations of people that will volunteer for that type of service and how you maximize that. I mean, case in point, we regularly provide a lot of backup services to our neighboring towns, particularly Ansonia and Shelton. We're probably in Ansonia sometimes as much as we are in Derby. And that's a good thing. It's a really very good thing. And that's true, I think, through most of this region, all the way up into Plymouth and Bristol, other than the few large towns like Waterbury and Naugatuck that have a paid department. There is a lot of interactivity. So besides the training school, the other thing that could be supported regionally would be regional communications. So we don't have the same radio system Ansonia does, or the same radio system that Shelton does. So the interoperability between the departments could be increased. And there may be some way to cross that over into a benefit between the local police departments.
When you say regional communications, you're talking about between like the fire departments, between the police stations.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm taking notes. If I'm looking down, I'm taking notes.
No, that's a good sign. I didn't feel like getting dressed up as well as Dave did for this meeting, so that's why I'm not showing my smiling face. Dave's got his great little warm flannel shirt on.
Hey, as long as it helps you talk, I don't mind. better that you feel comfortable. I totally get it. Shall we move on to the next question? There's only two more.
Sure.
Well, I think there's one more avenue that we ought to address on the regionalization of things. And I know that it's a bugaboo for a lot of people, but we really need to do something with our secondary school systems, and especially in Derby, that are really underpopulated to the point where a lot of programs are prohibitive because of the fact that there's not enough students there to have different types of educational opportunities and social opportunities that larger school systems are able to offer. And I don't know exactly the right way to address it, but it should be addressed.
No, that's a good point, because in our makeup of, in the NVCOG's makeup of 19 towns, there are some regional school systems which address the concern that David has mentioned. They have a lot more to offer because they are already regionalized.
Yeah.
Maybe joining forces with other communities to have a regional school or becoming part of that will give our kids the benefit of having more to offer them than, and it goes without, just along the lines of what you said, David.
Yeah.
And I know that the COG in the last few years was working on a consolidation study, at least that much. But I know that it for whatever reason, it didn't move forward. But yeah, you're right. Like Bethlehem and Woodbury, they have a combined regional system.
Beacon Falls and Prospect.
Exactly.
Right. You know, even if it's just at the secondary level,
mm-hmm.
Not the grammar schools, high schools. Another possibility is something like what Oxford did years ago, and that's tuition the kids out. Let the parents choose which high school that their students want to go to, and the the town will pay the tuition. Or perhaps there's some state aid involved in that as well. Mm-hmm. I think that there would be. But I certainly would like the COG to explore that.
All as part of a regional plan of conservation, well, just to make awareness, it great. Absolutely great.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else for question number two? Okay, I'm going to move on. Again, looking at our 19-town region, what do you think we do well or what don't we do well in this 19-town region?
I'll tell you one thing that we do. I'll just go back. I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but
no. If there's another comment, please jump in. Yes.
the volunteerism, as shown in a lot of these valley communities, is exceptional. And I think that goes to the core. It's not just in the fire department. I think you see a lot of that as a strength in the communities.
Right.
Great.
Another one, Ted and Steve, is our recreational opportunities. 1/5 of the landmass of the city of Derby is devoted to open space. We have Osborndale State Park, which takes up almost a quarter of the west side of town. We have Whittock Park on the east side of town. We have a river walk. We have a athletic field, that Ryan Field, that is second to none in the region. With the improvements that have been done there, partially by donation, partially by grant. That's something that, you know, Derby certainly could offer to the people in the region. And I know that the people in the region partake of it. It's primarily out-of-towners that use those recreational facilities other than the fields, other than the Ryan Field.
One of the things I agree with you, David, that you touched upon is the Riverwalk. The Derby Greenway is the most used greenway in the state. Why do they come there? Because it's accessible. People like it. People enjoy it. And it's free. And that should be highlighted in the regional plan of development. So should our fields.
Yeah.
That from the people that put it together, that's going to be, you know, that's something that's there. It's their mile. It's the big hit for them to be able to put. I think that should be highlighted in our regional plan of development. We have this gem that's underutilized, and it shouldn't be.
And I'm particularly excited about this O'Sullivan's Island that eventually will be developed.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all part of that's part of the Naugatuck River Greenway, and yeah, that will be mentioned in our plan for sure.
Great.
The fishing pier that was approved by the board last year, I believe, sometime. NVCOG just came to a meeting, and I guess they gave us an update on the Board of Aldermen. They're going to be starting that, I think, in the spring.
I guess this is a related question. I mean, do you think that there's any one town that represents the whole region, the 19 town region, that you would say, oh, they're the ones that we should be looking at? That
you mean that currently represents the...
Well, do you think that there's one town that overshadows everybody else's?
I wouldn't necessarily say overshadows, but I think Shelton's run very well.
Shelton doesn't even fit in this mix. They really don't. And, you know, one of my criticisms of this is that these towns are grouped together because they're geographically adjacent to one another. But the histories and the cultures in these different towns are about as diverse as you could find anywhere in Connecticut.
It is.
Derby doesn't share much at all with Woodbury. Okay. And Shelton doesn't share much with Beacon Falls. It's a hodgepodge of different, I think, different interests that the towns have. The people have different perspectives on issues within these various towns. So it's kind of tough to try to draw some parallels and some real connections between the towns here, other than the fact they're geographically attached.
Okay, fair point. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to move on to the last question here. Do you have a vision for the region, this 19-town region? Do you say, you know, in the future, I want X, Y, and Z for this, all of these 19 towns? Or for what you think the region wants to be known for?
I mean, I just think that's a hard, question to answer. I mean, 19 yeah. towns over a vast, I don't know the percentage of the state. I mean, that, I mean, like Dave said, you know, Oxford is even different than Derby, just, you know, with the agriculture, the farms that are still there, you know, it's just, you know, it's very hard just to put one label on 19 towns, in my opinion.
Maybe the strength is in the diversity town to town.
Maybe.
Strength in diversity? You said strength in the diversity?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's not a good, I have a question for Joanna.
Yes.
What's your vision for the VCOG region?
I want all of our towns to have residents who have a great quality of life, whatever they feel their quality of life is. I want people to have decent housing, warmth. I want people to be successful and healthy. And I want them to thrive, not just survive, but thrive, wherever, whatever community they choose to be in. That's, I live in Torrington, just FYI, but I really do have that wish for all of the residents and the people, not only the residents, but the people who work in the region as well. I mean, they're the ones who are also contributing to the economy and to the services that the residents benefit from.
Has there ever been talk of, you know, making, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like subcategories of the 19 towns?
Yes. So in the past, they've done like a urban core. I keep forgetting that there are two other.
We then have an inner ring suburb label.
Right. Right.
And then a kind of the more rural community label.
Right. It doesn't, you know, we're probably going to do this time around is do it by density. Well, you know, this is the density per census tract of people that live in a, you know, and, you know, do you have a lot more, like you said, open space as opposed to, you know, built out developed areas. So, but yeah, that's a great point. We have grouped them in the past in this more rural urban core and then like a suburban middle. Okay, I'm not hearing anything else at this point, but I just want to say that I did, if you have anything that you want to add, you know, we have an online survey for our land use commissioners, and I did send it to Ted Estwan, the PDF of the four questions, and there's also a little a QR code that you can scan and answer the questions maybe in your own time. It is pretty much anonymous, except for we do ask what town you're representing, but we don't ask for names. So if you want to add your comments at another time, we welcome that as much as possible. And I just want to mention, we do have a regular, for the general public, Regional Plan of Conservation and Development survey. If you could post it on your website, that would be great. This is one that's going to be open through the end of December. And I want to give the floor for a moment to Rich Donovan on the Metropolitan Transportation Plan.
Yes, so I won't take quite as long, and I don't have questions to discuss here in this meeting, but we do want to share that more or less concurrently with the Regional Plan of Conservation and Development, we are working on our federally mandated Metropolitan Transportation Plan. And so every metropolitan planning organization, which is every urban area with more than 50,000 residents has one, has to develop a long range plan that looks at a minimum of a 20-year period, identifies goals for the region, and prioritizes federal funding for the next, you know, again, over that time period. So our current MTP is going to be looking at 2023 to 2050. As you are part of the Greater Bridgeport and Valley MPO, it is the four lower valley towns and the towns of the Connecticut Metropolitan Council of Governments So the Bridgeport area. And those 10 towns will all be part of the GBV MPO's long range plan. Some of the critical things here, you know, we're looking at what are the priorities? What are the things we need to spend our money on? You know, over the next 5 years, at least, we know we have elevated spending levels or elevated federal funding levels. And so this is just to make sure that that money goes where our towns and residents would like to see it go. We are also running a survey. And so this QR code you see on your screen here is, again, open for the general public and looking to be or looking for feedback as to what our residents think is the priorities for our transportation system. That survey is going to be open through the end of this month. And we expect to have an initial draft of our metropolitan transportation plans finished in early January. And then similar to what Joanna was saying about the regional plan of conservation and development, the board of directors for the MPOs, which are the mayors of the 10 Lower Valley and MetroCOG towns, will all vote to adopt that plan once it is finished. It'll then go on to Federal Highway for their approval. And I'm happy to answer any questions about it or share anything specific.
So what are some of the ideas or the, you know, some of the talk on this, on the transportation plan?
Yeah, so we know, you know, here in Connecticut and right now the federal government's priorities are some of the non-automobile infrastructure. So there's additional upgrades coming to the Waterbury line. You know, as you know, right, the Derby Station is undergoing design right now through the RAISE program, as well as we look to continue to expand service on the rail line, as well as provide, you know, additional bus services into and out of the region. And kind of as you said before, right, like Derby really is the hub for the Lower Valley and for a lot of these towns for that connection to public transportation. And so we're really excited to see, you know, as the state moves forward with their design for the Derby station, what that's going to look like. But some of the other things we're looking at, you know, there's quite a bit of preservation work that needs to be done. Our roads are old. Our highways are old. Our infrastructure is old. And a lot of it, in addition to showing it from condition, shows it in terms of its operations. You know, right, Route 8 is congested and often dangerous. And so we have plans to look at some of the interchanges. We aim to help address some of the major safety concerns. You know, right, if I'm sure you've all tried to get on from Seymour Avenue and you kind of have to come to a stop at the bottom of the ramp as you come around a corner on the highway and you can't see what's happening. So, you know, right, those are the types of things that we really want to look at in that sense. And then there's a few, you know, a few of the more innovative type ideas we're looking at as well. You know, does some kind of a bus rapid transit system make sense for the region? There's really not a great direct connection at the moment by public transit from Derby to New Haven, and Derby down to Bridgeport is challenging because of the way the rail line is routed through Milford. You know, the New Haven main line is really crowded. And so it's difficult to get trains from the Waterbury line onto the main line. And that restricts how much service we can run. And so does it make sense to put some kind of a transfer station in and run Waterbury line trains more as a shuttle service than as a main line connection? And, you know, I don't know if you've seen the state rail plan that came out, but there's talk of extending the Waterbury line north to Torrington, extending it through the central Connecticut line to meet up with the Hartford line in Berlin. So there's quite a bit in the next 20 years, and we're excited about the additional federal funding because it lets us be a bit more imaginative with what we can do.
Rick, a couple of years ago, we had a presentation on some of the upgrades that were going on, and there was discussion about, and I heard subsequent discussion after that about the types of trains that we were going to be seeing on the Waterbury mm-hmm. line. And the more I thought about it at that point, the talk was that they were going to replace them with these very hybrid diesel electric trains that I came to understand are quite a specialty because they wanted to be able to transfer them right direct onto. Tell me that they gave up on the diesel idea and are going to electrify the route.
Well, I can't say 100% for sure. You know, the Department of Transportation's Office of Rail isn't always super forward with their plans with us, but What I can tell you is that the stage rail plan does specifically call out electrifying all current passenger service. So we're really hoping that means overhead wires and running the same cars you're seeing on the New Haven line.
I mean, as much as the overhead wires are unsightly and everything, it just doesn't make sense to be buying special equipment.
Yeah, exactly.
And
in my personal opinion, the M8s on New Haven line are the best rail car in America right now.
Yeah.
And so the fact that we have all of these, we have a ton of them, and they're all sitting there in New Haven, not getting used because we can't run them up here. Or they can't run them up the Hartford line.
Right.
That's just a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. You know, we're excited to see that that's the proposal, even if there are other issues that come with overhead wire, the benefits certainly outweigh the issues.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm just going to close up the presentation and with a big thank you for your time and sharing your comments and your thoughts and your questions. We're learning from everything that you mentioned this evening. If you have any questions, you can contact me or Rich. We will provide our information to Ted Estwan, and you know, we look forward to hearing from you. So thank you so much for your time.
And thank you both. We appreciate it. We all appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to item number 9B, possible zone text amendments to 195-138.A. I know it was on the Board of Aldermen's agenda last week. And my question came up, it's almost like, and Gino's part of that, so he can probably talk to it better than I can. It's almost part that they just, from what I understand.
Are you sure?
I just mentioned your name because you were there, you know? So the way it was explained to me was they just want to take more of a bite into enforcement issues than they currently have presently. If they want to legislate planning and zoning, then legislate it. My question was, I don't believe it is under the right facility to legislate that. It should be under planning and zoning, if that's what you want. If you want to have something changed and there's a reason why you want that and you saw that, then you should address it under the proper authorities. Barbara, I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but that's the way when I asked, it was explained to me.
I agree.
Yeah.
Changes are for the Planning and Zoning Commission.
In the way it was explained to me, I think our current regulations, there's one paragraph, and they want to go to, it's basically two or three pages. They just want to take more of a bite out of enforcement issues. What happens after the enforcement? There's fines, there's fees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it currently isn't laid out in our zoning regulations, but this will allow that to be laid out as part of our plan. So that's why I brought it before the commission at this time. It was punted to us, but I asked the question and it was pretty much, okay, we're not even going to talk about it. We'll take it off the agenda. And they placed it on, and I put it on our agenda because that's when I asked, that's the way it was explained to me. And I think I sent along to everybody here just to hear. I just want to hear some input from this commission. That's why I put it as an informal discussion. Does anybody have any comments from the commission on what I sent you? The way it is now, what's proposed, you know, and pretty much, you know, I don't know if we have to rule on it, if we have to accept it. We have to, if we're making changes to a regulation, does it require public hearing, et cetera, et cetera. I am asking Corp Counsel for their input as well.
Yeah, I mean, any changes to the regulations
okay.
would require a public hearing.
And I'm still here too for the moment. It would require public hearing, notification to NVCOG and SCROG, notification in the paper and a public hearing. So it really is the question for the commission is, do they want to entertain this? Obviously, staff at City Hall seems to think it's worthwhile. I know, Barbara, you've been assisting with some enforcement actions that have been problematic. So I guess just look over the proposed text amendment, and if you're agreeable, we can set a public hearing. You know, it's that simple.
Well, does this board have to set a public hearing, or the Board of Aldermen?
Yes,
has
to set a public hearing? Yes, we do.
It's totally within this board's jurisdiction and purview to review the zoning regulation and determine if it wants to make any changes. That's, I mean, the Board of Aldermen can recommend, you know, but this board decides whether to go forward with any action. And then, as Ryan said, all of those.
Oh, so that's okay. So it, okay. I got it.
For the record,
the Board of Aldermen shouldn't have really had this. It should be this board that makes the.
Just for the record.
I mean, again, it's fine at the Board of Aldermen, certainly as a legislative. You know, the town's legislative body can say, well, this is something we think is important. P&Z Commission, we think you should take this up. But the Board of Aldermen on its own cannot change a zoning regulation.
No.
Gotcha.
That's why I questioned why was it on the agenda in the first place. And the second place, this, I wanted to let you know, this came to me with no recommendation from the Board of Aldermen. Pretty much I've taken it upon myself to take section 195-138 upon ourselves for talk, because nothing came from them.
Right. And that's fine too. You know, they don't have to make the recommendation. This is not like an 824 referral.
Right.
This commission is free at any time to review and amend any regulation as it sees fit.
That's
as
correct.
As long as the proper procedures take place.
Who drafted this?
This was drafted, I believe, by Corporation Council and placed on their agenda because they wanted to see a change, although they didn't recommend anything to me from anybody from the Board of Aldermen.
And what's the clear, I mean, it looks like they just, I guess the question I have is, so what's the clear change? What does this really change in the enforcement from one to the other? Because it seems like a lot of language.
Steve, it's more than enforcement. It gives the appointing authority for the zoning enforcement officer and deputies to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Currently, the mayor appoints the zoning enforcement officer with approval from the Board of Aldermen. So that's a major change. We have ordinances in our revised ordinances that gives that power to the mayor and to the Board of Aldermen. And I don't see anywhere in this proposal that those ordinances would be rescinded. The other thing is this proposal doesn't set any of the terms of employment for the zoning enforcement officer. What's the salary? What's the hours of operation? What's the term of office? Okay, again, those are items that I believe are addressed in other city ordinances, and I wouldn't want to see us adopt a new regulation that's going to be in conflict with ordinances that are already on the books.
I mean, the original section already gave us the power to appoint a zoning officer,
not,
right?
Not the way it's done. We already have, the Planning and Zoning Commission has never appointed.
I understand they never have, but isn't what Ted circulated the existing 138 versus the suggested change? And the existing 138 is two paragraphs, right?
Yeah.
The commission shall appoint a zoning officer. The commission shall have responsibility and authority. I'm not saying that, by the way, was a good order, good way to put this together. Not saying it shouldn't be, you know, improved. But what you're saying, Dave, is that that authority was overridden by, city ordinances.
Yes.
Which I don't understand how that's possible, because Barbara, didn't you just say that the Board of Aldermen, the city can't really
Yeah, it
have jurisdiction over what's
going on. It's an odd situation, and now it makes more sense to me as to why this, I guess it was on the Board of Aldermen's agenda. But so, I mean, it is problematic if this commission is going to adopt some kind of ordinance, a regulation that is in conflict with a city ordinance. But the bottom line is still that it's up to this commission to amend its regulation. Only this.
Yes.
But why should we amend it if the city's not going to correct
amend parts of it?
Well, but we don't have to, because I didn't really know this, but I'm glad Barbara just said that. The Planning and Zoning Board is the governing body, right, that has the authority to make a text amendment or change a regulation. And once we do that, we have the Planning and Zoning Board has the final say, right? Because the Board of Aldermen can't override a zoning regulation or a change that we make, correct?
Gino, we have no authority for terms of employment.
Not something that would be part of a zoning regulation, right? I mean, obviously, just to clarify, when I say it's up to you, obviously, but you can only do the things that are within your jurisdiction to do.
Right. So that's what I'm asking. But, it would be
zoning. It is normal. I mean, the statute do say that it's the commission that generally appoints a zoning enforcement officer, because it's ultimately the commission that has the enforcement power, and that's what's being delegated when a zoning enforcement officer is appointed. So I'm not sure. I mean, perhaps I don't know the history of the practice in Derby. With any municipality I've dealt with, it's always been the Planning and Zoning Commission that appoints the zoning enforcement officer. I mean, Dave is right. Usually when you get into terms of employment, things like that, that's something different, you know, salary. I mean, you're still dealing with a town or city employee, but in terms of the appointment authority, that's my understanding by statute is that's the commission's authority.
Well, that's because there's a difference between being a hired employee and the mayor or this body appointing someone. Isn't there a difference in terminology and then what happens? The Planning and Zoning Board has the right to appoint the zoning enforcement officer, right?
Right.
Well, if it's changed, let's just say that the city of Derby could have the right to hire a zoning enforcement officer, then that would change things, no? Because the city of Derby would be hiring them. We would be appointing a person if you changed it to the city of Derby would hire somebody.
Right.
That would be different, right?
The city of Derby hires, but it's still the commission
but
that appoints.
Appointed by us.
If the commission, my understanding is if the commission, let's say, doesn't want a particular individual to be the zoning enforcement officer, the commission doesn't have to choose that individual. So, I mean, it's
correct.
It's true that correct. There are different functions here, but the commission is supposed to be the appointing authority and the one that delegates that enforcement authority.
I think it's a bit of a dilemma.
It
that has to be worked out before we
it change. Seems like it is in the city, and it I agree it's something that should be discussed. Just to be clear, does the Board of Aldermen, I understand you didn't get a formal recommendation, but does it appear that the Board of Aldermen is looking to hand over more authority to the commission regarding this? Is that why it was on the agenda?
The question I had, I saw it on the agenda and I said, wait a minute, they're trying to legislate changing our rules. That's wrong. And I read a little bit more into it, and it's a as David put it, it's a strange situation, but I don't, if they want to be our planning and zoning commission, I'll hand them the gavel. They can do it. But you can't, that's not the way I understand it, as you explained it earlier.
Right.
So I brought up for a discussion to get everybody's take on that, not just mine.
I think we're all in favor of strengthening the enforcement actions. And
right.
I think we've all, or at least Ted and you and I, most of us have felt like we should have more control over it to try to get things done and change. But this doesn't seem to be, there seems to be a lot missing here. Especially Dave referencing the fact that there are city ordinances that are countering this. So I think,
but I think that what we're looking at right here is what's on the books right now. Right. And then where it's got the two paragraphs, that's 195-38. That's what we have on the books now. Correct.
Correct.
And then the next, section, it says repeal and pay 195-138 subsection A. That's the new proposed ordinance.
That's correct. Now, when I received these two, this is the way it was presented to the Board of Aldermen. So,
okay, I'm driving right now, so I don't have my notes, but I think the repeal and the replace, I think there was things like David said that were already on the in ordinances that they pulled from places too. If I might be thinking of something else, another ordinance that was there.
No, these are ordinances, Gino, granting the powers and duties of the mayor and the Board of Aldermen.
It should be stated in our proposed new regulations. It should be stated refers to ordinance number so and so, established by this state, that that is the power of the Board of Aldermen or the mayor or whatever to appoint this it should refer directly back to that, so we can take a look and say, aha, okay, it refers to this ordinance. Why are we making this change? Is it worth it? And like Steve mentioned earlier, we're all for a better bite,
right?
To make it because it talks about fines and so on here and the liability violations and so on. It kind of spells out what they're allowed to do, which, because I talk to Kevin White all the time and he says, are we allowed to do this? Are we allowed to do that? Well, nothing ever told us we could, but now we have something that does. But to your point, if we're going to say, okay, there's already ordinances on the books that it's appointed by the mayor, it's done this, it's done that, then it should refer to that in the new regulations.
And perhaps those ordinances also need to be revised.
Right. Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So that all of the above.
Conflict.
Right.
I want to make one other point on the proposal here. There's other duties that the zoning enforcement officer has besides, you know, pursuing fines and besides, citing violations. The zoning enforcement officer also has duties to the Zoning Board of Appeals. Okay. And when
we want it all spelled out.
Yeah, well, and a lot of those duties are spelled out in our zoning regulations under the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Right.
Well, we should at least make reference to those sections of the regulations when it comes to the job description for the zoning enforcement officer. That's a very important duty, too. There's also one other thing, and Barbara, you might want to address this. And I'll use as an example, the zoning enforcement officer cites someone for a violation and they're going to, threaten them with the fine that's in this this new proposal. And that person turns around and says, no, I don't believe that I have a violation. I think the zoning enforcement officer is incorrectly interpreting the regulation. I want to appeal it. They're not going to appeal it to this board that we're going to be creating for the fines. They have to appeal it to the Zoning Board of Appeals by state statute. That's who hears appeals.
You mean a cease and desist order?
Any kind of order, any kind of violation order that the zoning enforcement officer places on someone, if they contest it that and say it's not a violation, it has to be resolved by the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Well, unless it's under 7152C, right? If it's a citation that has to go then to a citation hearing officer.
Well, I think
I don't know, Dave, that if it's clear in state statute the responsibilities of the ZBA in that capacity. Yeah. So I don't know that the regulations need to echo that. They could, but it's kind of redundant. Yeah.
I mean, usually regulations do. I agree with Ryan. It's not necessary, but I think you find in most municipalities, the regulations want to make that clear. You're right. I mean, any order short of the citation that's issuing fines, that right. would, if somebody wants to appeal that, that's going to go to the ZBA. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, Dave, after that, it goes to a citation hearing officer.
And Dave, I got to look at the ZBA regulations. I think it's 195-80, I believe.
Right.
Do those do not say that the ZBA's role is also to review disputes from?
Oh yes, it does.
It already says that. Are you referring to the ordinance then about the duties of the zoning enforcement officer?
Yeah.
So
in terms of the job description, I think that somehow or another, we should slip that in there reference to that 195-80. Okay.
Okay. So that's more of an ordinance issue. I just want to make it clear that, where the concern is, not with the regulations in that sense.
Well, no, that's the ordinance.
Right, it's a regular. We don't, in other words, we don't need to change the regulations for that.
No. So you need to. What I'm saying is that the job description there should.
Board of Aldermen. Yeah, got it.
Right.
Sorry, I'm walking down the street as I'm talking. I'm in Denver at a conference.
Oh, that's nice.
It's very mile cold high. And snowy here.
Mile high. I see Kevin White is on board here, Kevin. You have any words of wisdom for us?
Kevin, you're muted.
You're on mute. Could you text him, Ted? He's on mute.
You're still muted, Kevin. Figure it out. There you go.
All right. You listen to all of this and then you do the job and on a daily basis. I think in my one of my experiences is that I think that what we have to do is go to a next level. And that level is a legal way of getting teeth into your ordinance where you say to a person, we're going to fine you. We have approval from our governing board, the Board of Aldermen, that backs us up. And then you set, as you said, a procedure where the person that you're citing has a means to address what my interpretation or anyone's interpretation is of the regulation. After that meeting, then there's a decision made. Yes, they were fined properly. You levy the fines, you put a lien on the property, and down the road, whenever there's any transactions, a sale or they're going for a new mortgage, that lien that you have on the property has to be resolved or they can't go for it. And we had that very successfully done in East Haven. We were able to collect about anywhere between $100,000 and $150,000 in fines over the course of 2 years. after doing basically with the same thing that you guys are, you know, beginning to do now. And, you know, you're right. You're on the path. You just have to move forward one more step.
Okay.
Thank you, Kevin.
You'll always look at these regulations in black and white. And then when you see it, you know, in the field or in the woods, as I say, you know, there's always an interpretation. And as Dave said, you know, that interpretation then goes to a zoning board of appeals. If they decide that they back up whoever,
right,
then you move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
And everyone, that's why I put it on the agenda for an informal discussion, because again, I wanted the opinions of us, staff, and everybody else to just do you want to go forward with something like this? If it needs to be further addressed, should we address it any further? Like you said, Kevin's the feet on the street. You know, it has to
be done, because if you show up on someone's property without this kind of backup, you know, whether they know it or not, you know it, that there's no teeth in what you're really doing. So you kind of, you really don't have any way to proceed.
Exactly.
Amen, brother. I know.
You have to have this, you have to get to this next step.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would I be out of order to ask how this relates to the blight ordinances?
You wouldn't be out of order, but blight is handled totally separate from this commission. And Karen, what I like to do is keep what we could legislate in our box. It does, you know, a lot of times we tend to, every commission, every board tends to drift outside their box. I tend to legislate it. That's why I tell a lot of people, and you'll hear me all the time, tell people, if you have it, go see our Board of Aldermen, go see the Blight Commission, go see this, because we don't have the power to legislate that.
Right. Board of Aldermen regulates blight.
Yeah, no, I only raised the question because Kevin White was pointing out to certain things that most certainly we would like to get some teeth into things. That's why I asked. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Karen. Okay, what is the pleasure of the commission? Would you like Corporation Council to dig into the change of the ordinance a little bit further and bring it back next month? Maybe not, to have something different for us to look at, so at least we can look at, we can go from there.
I would agree with that, but I also would like to get some clarification about the ordinances that may be in conflict.
Totally agree.
Get a full picture.
Right.
Totally agree.
I'm going to speak to Ben about this, because honestly, I find this confusing myself, how this dovetails with the regulations versus the ordinances. And I do think it needs to be clarified.
I printed these regs and I sent it to everybody. This was not referred to me.
I get that, but just hearing what the ordinances say. I personally find this a little bit confusing, and as I said, it's not clear to me how it all fits together.
Go ahead, Barbara. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was just going
to
say I'm gonna have a talk with Ben about it, and I'll report back next month.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, Jaina.
I don't remember. To be honest with you, like I said, I'm driving, but I have to check my notes. But I don't remember this being on the Board of Aldermen.
We had on the Board of Aldermen an ordinance about
the fire marshal and going in three family houses. And there was two other ones, but I don't recall the zoning enforcement officer coming up in it. But I'm not saying it's wrong or right. I don't have anything in front of me. And there's a lot of stuff that's been going back and forth. So I could be, mistaken, but I don't know.
I asked the question before your last meeting, and I was told that night it was taken off the agenda.
It was on there. Yes,
it was gone. Okay.
We deleted
nobody
it.
Nobody sent it. Yeah, nobody sent it to me. I printed it myself. I saw it online. I took all this information myself, And I sent it to commission members. I said, well, I could see what they're trying to do.
Okay, that's why I didn't remember it. And there was another ordinance that they wanted. Okay, I know exactly what they're okay. Okay, very good. I got you. Thank you.
Got it. I understand. Okay, so it's from what I hear, it's a pleasure of the commission to hear it again. I'll keep it on the agenda. We'll discuss it next month. Barbara, we'll talk to Vin. Maybe he'll want to appear before this commission. Maybe we can tweak the regulation a little bit that it refers to certain ordinances. Maybe those ordinances are good. Maybe they're bad. Maybe you don't need something here, but I'd like to hear it from them and be referred to us that they would like us to take a look at.
Right. And again, as you know, Dave kind of pointed out, we have to make sure that whether it's an ordinance or it's a zoning regulation that we're either board is doing what it's authorized to do by statute, right?
Right.
Because ultimately that's all that the municipal boards can do. So that's what I just want to make sure that that's all in line.
Exactly. And since it's an informal discussion, I don't think we need a motion or anything, but I think people would like to hear more about, since it is drafted, nothing's cast in stone. We do have this here. We'd like to hear more about it, period.
I agree. You don't need a motion.
Okay. Okay. With that, we'll move on to item, and I'll keep it on the agenda for discussion next month, and hopefully our questions could be answered. Okay, we'll move on to 9C 213 Caroline Street. This is one of Kevin's favorite subjects. This is what it's Caroline Street. We passed it just to give everybody background because they probably heard it before. They remember it. It was passed. They wanted to change it from two or three to five two-family apartments or two-bedroom apartments. And then they came to Kevin with three bedroom apartments. And he said, no, that's not what you're approved for. So the architect went back and relabeled it study. We all know that can turn into a bedroom. So we're trying to do Barbara, I'll defer to you. Do we have any legal bite here to say, you got to redesign it? Why don't you come back and redesign it? If they can label it whatever they want.
It's still a bedroom.
And back, it goes back to the enforcement issue. You know, right. If we tell them it's a two family, they put in a three family, how do we enforce that?
Cease and desist.
Yeah, but there's no way to enforce the cease and desist. You could send any letters that you want, but unless
no follow up with a fine.
Yeah, but again, there's no way of fining because you can't collect the money.
Right.
There's no way for you to get them to say, I fine you $5,000 because you're not doing what we want. They just say, okay, fine. And they close the door and that's the end of it.
Hey, Kevin, without a certificate of zoning compliance, they can't get a certificate of occupancy.
Oh, Dave.
They get the zoning compliance, they get a certificate of occupancy.
You know how many leaks exist out there?
They put in what they want.
I just had a call 3 weeks ago. Somebody's had what was zoned as on the books as a two family.
Right.
They've had at least three families living there. When I went to check it out, there's four mailboxes.
Yeah. So, I mean, so two of the apartments are illegal.
Yeah, that's on here. We'll get to that too, because I put that on the agenda.
This is a question of, do I have the authority? As looking at that map where they had the three bedrooms, they changed one bedroom and turned it into a study. And I told the guy, I'm not going to give you a permit until you change the drawings, eliminating that room.
Yeah.
I think you have the authority to do that.
I do.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, then that's you're enforcing the regulations.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's your authority.
Okay. Okay.
As far as room names, there's very few that have a definition, but a bedroom does have a definition. So, I mean, you can call anything you want, storage, study, office, but bedroom does have a definition.
Yes.
There needs to be a door. There needs to be an egress window and there needs to be a closet. So if he has a room, if he has a room with no door and he has a large, say a 4 foot cased opening and no built in wall closet, it's not a bedroom. So he can call it whatever he wants, right. But if there is those, if there are those three things, it is a bedroom, and you know, then you can, then you're allowed to, you know, weigh in as however heavy you'd like to weigh in. But like I said, there's very few rooms that have definitions, right. But a bedroom does.
It sure does.
There's one more element in there too, Raul. It has to be at least 70 square feet. In the size.
But then that has to do with, you know, the size of the window that's there and
size of the room. Yeah.
Things that, yes. Yes. Right. It can't have a 7 foot ceiling either.
Right.
It has to be habitable with a 7.5 foot ceiling, right. And those other things that I mentioned.
So again,
so does he meet that requirement there with the study?
I mean, if
per
it's,
plan,
if it has
for the updated plan,
I don't know what's in that room, but if there's a room with a closet in it, you can't call it something other than a bedroom, and right. It meets those other things. You just can't. Like I said, there's few rooms that have a definition, but bedroom is one of them.
Just to bring one other point out, I spoke to the architect a week and a half ago, and I explained to him what my theory was on this. He told me at that point in time that he would talk to the owner, thinking that everything was going to be fine and come back with new drawings, but I have not heard back from him.
Is this a project that came before planning and zoning?
Yes, it did.
Oh, this is the one with the Dominic's dirt lot.
Client. That, all right. Where? Exactly. And if we paved up and there was no break, they'd go over the stone bank. Wall or
the bank. Yeah.
The bank.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's got the power line in the back or something, right?
Correct. Remember?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, this is a big multifamily, right?
Bye. Right.
Oh, okay. Now I know.
We approved it for one thing. They came in for zoning compliant of something else. And Kevin said, wait a second. I said, that wasn't approved. So they said, okay, we'll change this to a study. And as Raul pointed out, if there's a bedroom, a closet, window, it's still a bedroom. You can call it whatever you want.
And here's another angle on that. Our parking requirements are based on number of bedrooms.
Right.
In that zone.
That is correct. Right.
That's correct. So, that's exactly what.
Yes. So,
if the architect comes back and labels it a study, because we haven't seen a revised print, that's what Kevin said, or he hasn't seen it.
No.
And he doesn't add a closet to it. It doesn't constitute as a bedroom.
No, you don't need a closet.
So it doesn't have to have all the requirements, no. Just a certain few.
The concern was
I have three bedrooms. Okay, I'll submit another set of plans. And the first time they went, they said, well, we have two bedrooms and one's a study. Hey, wait a minute. We all know what's going to happen. What is the extent that Kevin could say, no, redo the plans as a two-bedroom unit, not two bedrooms, relabel the third bedroom as a study because I brought it up to you because you're not approved for that. And from what I understand, they just got by on the parking. There's no wiggle room on the parking.
There's none.
No, because there was one.
They had that handicapped parking spot along the building, right? Okay, I remember that, yeah.
Ed, when they submitted their plans, they submitted floor plans also. And on those floor plans, it showed one bedroom efficiency and two bedroom units. There were no three bedroom units.
Correct.
On their floor plan that was submitted with their application.
Correct. Approval.
And they even stated how many bedrooms that they were going to have on a matrix in order to determine the number of parking spaces.
Parking, that's correct.
I never saw those drawings.
Huh?
I never saw that drawing.
Oh, we have them.
Okay.
Ryan could get them to you, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. But the ones they submitted had three bedrooms.
Those were not the ones that were approved, Kevin.
Okay. Well, I didn't pass them anyway. You know that, Dave. You know that, Dave.
I know.
Didn't work.
No, the wheels of justice churn slowly. You know how
government is. Very slow. That's why I put it.
Until I see something different, then I'm not going to do anything.
Okay.
So, Ted, do we have to take any action here?
No.
On this?
No. It's an informal discussion. I put it on the agenda because I wanted to take it. Kevin asked me, you know, do we hear anything more? I said, I'll put it on the agenda. I'll put it in our hands to tell Kevin what he's allowed to do, which will bring us to 9D. 310 Sentinel Hill Road. Everybody knows that house. For crying out loud. You move, you go onto the, Kevin goes onto the property, they throw him off the property. He can't inspect it.
I can't.
Yeah, no. We all see the air conditioner in the summer that's in the attic. So you know there's more than what he's allowed to have. But what is the enforcement issue? How far can we go? How far can Kevin go? And we take it. Look, we went with the detention basin. We went to court for that to get police escort and so on and so on and so on to do that with a detention basin with nobody living there. How far can we take it to take it out of Kevin's hands, put it in our hands, and force our regulations onto this person who doesn't seem to care about regulations?
No.
I mean, you could do the same thing here and go to court. You know,
we should. And that's why I want to take it out of his hands and put it in our hands.
Right. It doesn't matter if it's residential or what. That's immaterial.
Right.
And that's why I brought up this discussion because, you know, anything we say or do, we're not allowed to say or not allowed to do with this individual. And this individual has every excuse under the book. So I want to take it out of his hands.
Ted, that property's been on the blight list for at least 15 years.
But again,
nobody
cares.
No taken?
Right.
He doesn't care. Put me on the blight list. So what? He's putting a porch on now. He's got somebody working there every day putting on a porch. Yeah. For how many people? I don't know. Yeah. For how many permits? We don't know.
Hey, I almost bought that tow motor he's got for sale.
Now he's selling.
Oh, this is the one with the machine on the front lawn.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay. Now I know where it is.
Okay.
It's not fair to have it and just one person gets abused, whoever our zoning enforcement officer is.
Right. He doesn't pay
attention. Doesn't deserve that.
No, I don't.
Right. He doesn't even care. No.
Right. This person in this house. Put me on the blight list? Okay. I don't want you to get off my property, period. We can't even inspect it.
No, I could only imagine how many people are living in there, too.
Who knows? We don't know.
No, a lot of cars out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of cars. There's a lot of shit for sale. He's constantly putting stuff on the house. We don't know.
That's where all the cars are parked at Whittick Park all night.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
I mean, look, if there's indicia that without actually going in inside and inspecting, you can reasonably infer that there's a violation, then that's enough. You know,
the point I have
again,
is like David said, he's been on the blight list for how many years? Doesn't care.
At least.
Doesn't care. Put me on the blight list.
As you said, though, Ted, that would be separate, right? That would be for a separate body to decide if they want to move forward. I'm saying in terms of the zoning regulation, I understand you want to get inside to actually be able to see what's going on. But I'm just saying, based on what I'm hearing, it sounds like there might be enough to infer that there's the violation. And if there's enough evidence of that without doing an actual inspection, then that's enough for the CEO to.
If this individual doesn't care about the blight list, they're not going to care about a piece of paper that says cease and desist. They're not going to care.
Right. You're right.
They're just not going to care.
It won't even open.
They're going to say cease and desist. Okay, they'll throw it away. They'll tear it up. They'll throw it away.
But you might have to go through that process at least.
If you're telling us there's a process, if you're telling us there's a process we have to go through, then so be it. We'll go through the process. There's no question about it.
Right. I mean, it's one thing if you're in a situation where you don't have the information. So you have to go to court right away to say, judge, give us an order so we can get in there. But what I'm saying is if you feel like you have enough, just from what you're seeing that you know there's a violation, then at least you can move forward with the process. And you get to the point where everything's ignored, that's when we go to court. And we then ask for an injunction.
That's
fine. See
what
I'm saying? That's
if we have to
two
go
different
through that,
things.
Right. If we have to go through that to do this, we already know the outcome.
Right. But I think you do have to go through the process.
Okay.
Like you would do with anybody else.
Right. And the devil is in the detail on that.
That's why I invited Kevin to the meeting to know what he has
to
do.
Lay out the process because it's a complicated process to do that.
Gino chimed in. Everybody knows about this person. Everybody knows about the property. Everybody knows about the house. Everybody's got a story about it. So let's bring it to an end.
There's no question, but to get to the point where you're going to go to court.
Yeah.
For enforcement. There's quite a few steps that have to be followed.
Then we should follow them and go on.
Right.
And move on and take it out of our zoning enforcement's hands, our ZO's hands, and place it. If we have to go to court, we go to court. Right.
Yes.
Right. All I'm saying is, even though we say, hey, we know what the outcome's going to be, I think you have to treat everybody the same, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You got to start with what would you do first? You would issue a cease and desist order. All right. Yeah. That's ignored. You issue the citation. That's ignored. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through those steps and then eventually you get to court.
Okay. And I said, the big part too is that you have the abilities not to get just to court, but to get liens on the property.
Yeah.
That makes a big difference. $100 a day in 7 days is $700 plus interest and your attorney's fees. You know, they might play coy for a while, but when you start looking at $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 in fines, it adds up fast. Believe me, it does. We were very successful with it.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
You have to be willing to go forward with the foreclosure actions and
correct.
To collect. It's got to be a process.
And again, there's so many different avenues now. People want to change. They want to change, mortgage. They want to refinance, whatever. If there's a lien there, they can't.
Right.
And it's not like we're being unreasonable either.
No,
no.
We're doing what you're supposed to do. That's what our jobs are. That's what we're there for.
Right. No, Gino, we've been more than patient.
You have those rights.
Absolutely. I agree.
Okay. So you know what you have to do, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm going to take a look at the file. I'll be in touch with you next week. I'll have something in the mail next week.
Okay, perfect.
I'll go up and I'm going to take some pictures too. I can take pictures from the road.
Perfect. Thank you, Kevin.
Okay.
And thanks for attending.
Bye.
We'll move on to item number 10, payment of bills. For the record, I don't have any. Ryan said we can wait till December if we need to. I don't have any. Motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn, Ted.
Second. I'll second.
Okay. Have a nice holiday, everybody.
Oh,
we'll see you next month. Take care.
Bye. Thank you. Thanks. Good night now.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thank you.